This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Republican state lawmakers want to spend more than $2.5 million to fund crisis pregnancy centers in North Carolina. This despite a report from the State Department of Health and Human Services that does not recommend expanding one of the centers that receives a bulk of the state money. Crisis pregnancy centers say they aim to assist women when experiencing an unexpected pregnancy. In this state, many are run by evangelical Christian organizations. Joining us to talk about the proposed funding and the crisis pregnancy centers in North Carolina is Dawn Vaughn, a reporter for the News and Observer. Welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about this funding proposal. What is it and where is it now in the legislature?
So they haven't passed a budget yet. So nothing, that's the whole budget standoff, another issue that's been dragging on this summer. But I wrote a story toward the end of June about this money in the budget that came up in committee where they were questioning expanding the funding for the crisis pregnancy centers. Already received state money, and that was continuing, but they were going to expand or planning to expand a pilot program. And some of the this was supported by Republicans, and some of the Democrats were questioning why the money needs to go to this particular group, the Human Coalition, which was this pilot program that was expanding, and why not go through other services as far as providing things for women. And so what happened? Oh, go ahead.
Well, go ahead. Finish that, because I have a question about the controversy over Human Coalition, but do go ahead.
Right. Well, that's really where I was leading. Yeah, just leading into is that the one of the Democrats that was questioning it was Julie Bonhafen, who's an Apex Democrat. And she, you know, looked into asking the Department of Health and Human Services about this and had additional documentation from them. And I looked at a report that they did not recommend expanding funding for the Human Coalition because the reports that they submitted during the pilot program were incomplete and late. So they did not recommend expanding the program, though that still was still part of the budget.
And
this is all a very small amount of money compared to the overall budget.
The overall budget, but it's a huge increase. Are we talking about a fourfold increase then that over the pilot program?
The Human Coalition received $300,000 each of the past 2 years, and so this would expand it to, I guess, $1 million.
A million.
Look at the exact numbers.
Yeah. So at least a treble increase.
Sorry, $1.2 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and this is where Health and Human Services says, well, their data is incomplete. We can't even assess how they've done because they're not filling out the paperwork. And so if we haven't done the assessment, why would you triple their budget? Is more or less what the DHS is saying. We can't recommend you expand the program from the Department of Health and Human Services.
Right. It was a report to the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee on Health and Human Services and Fiscal Research Division from DHHS. So they did not, because of the lack of reporting. And Bonhafen said she doesn't agree, the representative doesn't agree with giving these money groups, but her biggest concern was that it was not recommended to expand funding because their reporting was incomplete.
And there's another group, the Carolina Pregnancy Care Fellowship, which has been found to perhaps have misused some federal block grant money. Is that right?
That's not anything that I've reported on. I talked to them with this story about the state funding, and they're a membership organization of 70 pregnancy care agencies, and they kind of broke down what the pilot program was, this continuum of care pilot program. But I've only written about them with the state funding.
So talk about the reason that supporters are giving for funding this over and above the reservations expressed by DHHS. And we should point out that we reached out to Josh Dobson and Gregory Murphy. They're two Republican members of the House Appropriations Committee for Health and Human Services. And we asked if they wanted to comment on their appropriation and why they're supporting this. They never returned our phone calls. What are they telling you? Why do they want to support this in the face of this ambivalence to maybe an objection by DHHS?
Well, they support when it came up in committee as far as why having this money and Democrats questioning it. Republicans said this is just part of comprehensive care and that there are different things. And I did look at the reports, and some of what they had were these specific referrals to other services and connecting them with other services. And they said that's what the funding would go toward. But I think a lot of it is, you know, different lawmakers' opinions on what kind of organizations should get money. The fact that they're affiliated with religious groups, some people don't like that, but the government actually gives a lot of money to religious groups. There are various ways through different kinds of grant funding and everything else. When I covered local government in Durham, it's the same kind of thing. If you give money to maybe a religious organization that has a food bank or something like that. So there's a lot of affiliated religious groups with places that govern money. Of course, a lot of people don't agree with that.
Right. And some of the questions do come from the reporting from Rewire.news that reported that the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services confirmed that the Carolina Pregnancy Care Fellowship, this is the other organization that I mentioned earlier, had misspent public money to the tune of $50,000 that were printing religiously based brochures using that money. And that was according to Rewire. That was confirmed by the Department of Health and Human Services. So that would be where theoretically you've crossed a line. You're using state money to print religious publications, not just hand out food or shelter, which other religious things would do. So that was kind of part of that story. But let's get a broader look at crisis pregnancy centers in our state and around the country from two other guests. Kimberly Kelly is an associate professor of sociology at Mississippi State and the director of gender studies. Thanks for being here, Kimberly.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Lindsay Beierstein is here, a journalist and documentary filmmaker. Hello, Lindsay.
Great to be here.
Kimberly, what is a crisis pregnancy center?
So a crisis pregnancy center is an evangelical Christian organization with twin goals: to prevent abortion and to proselytize by reaching out to women with volunteer lay counselors. And as a conservative Christian organization, they also promote very traditional, some would even say patriarchal, norms regarding abstinence, marriage, adoption, single parenting, and abortion.
Are they all religiously based?
Almost all of them in the United States. I am aware of at least one in Bloomington, Indiana, that takes a completely secular approach, and they do approach their clients and their needs quite differently.
What's the evolution of these centers over time and their relation to the abortion question in the United States?
So crisis pregnancy centers are actually the oldest and largest anti-abortion movement in the United States. They're about 50 years old. The first centers were founded just prior to Roe v. Wade in 1973. And unfortunately, when they first started operating, they used a lot of coercive tactics. They would tell women that abortion was murder. They would show them gory pictures of aborted fetuses. They'd actively trick women into thinking the center was an abortion provider and then ambush clients once they arrived. By the 1980s, the media was kind of onto the movement and had started reporting on these practices. And a number of crisis pregnancy centers were named as defendants in very high-profile lawsuits involving their coercive tactics and some of their adoption practices. And so the movement kind of went into a tailspin. Volunteers and donors started leaving, and two national networks, CareNet and Heartbeat International, started cleaning the movement up by standardizing practices. They forbade inflammatory rhetoric. They forbade fetal pictures. And that all started in the early 90s when there were about 400 centers. This more moderate approach has really paid off for centers because now there's about 2,500 centers in the U.S. today.
Lindsay Beierstein, who goes to CPCs for help?
These are not the kind of places that you go to if the world is your oyster. Let's just put it that way. They say they're for all pregnancies. They're trying to get away from the moniker crisis pregnancy center, but realistically, they target low-income women, they target women of color, they target women who are unhappy or anxiously pregnant.
And are they located in any particular region in the country? We're talking about North Carolina, of course, but nationally, what do we see?
They're located across the country and especially densely populated in abortion-hostile states in the South.
Kimberly Kelly, what kind of services do they offer?
So the scope of services can vary by the size and budget of the center, but all crisis pregnancy centers offer over-the-counter urine pregnancy tests, lay counseling, parenting classes, referrals for social services like Medicaid or WIC, and some material resources like maternity and baby clothes. Most of them today now offer non-diagnostic ultrasound, and about 20% offer STD testing. A few are networked with maternity homes or adoption agencies. But the catch is that for all services except for pregnancy tests and counseling, clients have to meet obligations set by the center to receive any help, such as attending a Bible study, for example, in exchange for maternity clothing.
So they advertise their services as free without cost?
Well, they don't cost money, but they do cost time.
I see. So then these catches then are they're contingent. Receiving the service is contingent on this religious obligation.
Yes.
Lindsay, what about the license? Are there licensed healthcare professionals working at these centers, and do they offer services?
There's a spectrum of medicalization from places that are essentially offices with brochures and videos and baby clothes to pseudo clinics where the staff wear scrubs and there's maybe a medical director with an MD or some licensed nurses that are actually doing, say, the ultrasound procedures. But they're fake clinics at the end of the day. They're not offering a full repertoire of reproductive health care. You can't go there for a pelvic exam. You can't get antibiotics for an infection. You can't do any of the normal things. They've got a hand-picked repertoire of things that they do that are part of their leverage techniques to get women in so that they can proselytize them and bully them into continuing their pregnancies.
Lindsay, Kimberly was talking about the fact that a lot of the more drastic techniques that had been used early on were more or less cleaned up and less offensive, so it meant that they were in court less often. But you said there are still some pretty interesting techniques that you discovered in the process of making your documentary.
Oh, yes. Well, when I was filming in North Carolina at a preferred women's health center, I witnessed firsthand how a local crisis pregnancy center would set up giant purple RVs on the loop road on the way to the abortion clinic. And everybody had to drive past these giant buses, and they would have staffers out trying to recruit people, drawing people in from their cars as they drove, saying, come get an ultrasound, come get an ultrasound on our bus. And escorts and staffers from the clinic told me that patients have come in saying that they've been lured into the ultrasound bus with the promise that it'll make your appointment go faster. So because you do have to have an ultrasound before you have a regular clinical abortion, a real diagnostic one from a doctor. But so they have at least sometimes told people that that this is a clinical ultrasound that they can use. And this has actually been written up in the literature, even still regularly. Relatively recently that this is a technique that they use. They tell people, oh, we'll give you a free ultrasound so you don't have to pay for the visit that's part of the waiting period.
Well, I see. And Kimberly, that does bring us to another question. In most cases, these are not licensed medical clinics, and that means that privacy restrictions that would apply to a clinic don't apply to the CPCs, right?
Correct. And in my own field work, I did see client confidentiality routinely violated.
How so? Where would it go? I mean, why would the clinic be interested in giving your information to anybody else?
Well, the most common thing I witnessed was a conversation between a lay counselor and a client was supposed to be kept confidential. But what often happened is after the client left, the lay counselor would then come out to wherever the rest of the counselors were at that particular time and pretty much give them a play-by-play of what had happened in that counseling session.
Is it common for CPCs to get government funding, Kimberly?
Yeah, it really has varied. It's definitely on the increase. You know, the United States is becoming increasingly conservative with regards to abortion and women's reproductive autonomy. And we see this reflected in increased public funding for CPCs, as well as the controversy over funding for all-option healthcare centers like Planned Parenthood. But these larger sums that are coming either through Choose Life license plates, through outright state allocations, or even through federal TANF block grants. These are steadily increasing the amount of money available to these centers, and it's allowing them to expand not only from the more traditional functions of a pregnancy center, but many are now offering marriage counseling to low-income women receiving TANF benefits, and even offering abstinence-only sexual education in public schools.
But this would be, I mean, again, we talked about this earlier. The fact is that there are religious organizations that receive state funding to do these kind of social services. What would be the problem here, Kimberly?
Well, to go back to their traditional functions, the first problem is they have a vested interest in influencing women's decisions based on their religious worldview. They are not there to provide all options. They are not there to provide obligation-free resources. They have a clear hierarchy for pregnant client outcomes in order: marriage, adoption, single parenting, and never abortion. That is not the same thing as offering women a realistic discussion of all of their options with accurate information, which CPCs do not provide when it comes to abortion.
We should point out that, again, that we reached out to two Republicans who support this legislation to increase the funding, Josh Dobson and Gregory Murphy. We've repeatedly called their offices. We have not received a response. Lindsay, what do we know generally? How's the money used? What do they spend it on?
The money is used for a variety of things. Some of it goes to training volunteers, physical office space, that kind of thing. But one of the biggest and showiest things is buying ultrasound machines, that they really love to have these ultrasounds available so that they can get women in and say, you can listen to your baby's heartbeat and various things like that, that they don't have any diagnostic value, but they have immense propaganda value. So large chunks of money are being allocated for that sort of thing. Also for advertising, those big billboards, scared and pregnant, that you see all over the place on the highway. Those are usually affiliated with crisis pregnancy centers. And making content. You mentioned that the North Carolina-funded outfit that was slapped on the wrist for making proselytizing materials. What they were doing was they were subcontracting to another Christian-friendly organization to make these DVDs and videos with proselytizing messages. So they're paying their friends to make this content that then they force on the crisis pregnancy clients. And sometimes they even have weird little token economies. One was described as mommy dollars and daddy bucks. So if you watch the proselytizing video, you would accrue mommy dollars so that you could go spend in their nursery and pick up, various necessities for your baby. But as Kim was saying, it's not free. You have to listen to the spiel.
Well, Kim, tell us about this, because there is at least one secular approach to the CPC model, right?
There is. There is a pregnancy resource center called All Options in Bloomington, Indiana. And it is secular. They do offer, like the religious centers, in-person peer counseling, pregnancy tests, some material resources like diapers. But they also they take for granted that every woman knows what is best for herself and empowers her to carry out that choice. So this is obviously very different from CPCs, who think that they know what's best for women and are trying to persuade them to have an abortion. All Options believes that women already know what they need and they just need to be empowered to carry that decision out. So they have the Hoosier Abortion Fund, for example. They will actually help women pay for their abortions if that's what they decide to do. So it's clearly a very different model.
Well, let's get back to what's happening here in North Carolina, and I'll talk to Dawn Vaughn again from the News and Observer. The fact is, some objections and concerns are raised about this funding that is in a currently dormant budget. As we know, the budget has been vetoed, and we're at an impasse at this moment. So if the budget negotiations are revived, Dawn, what do you think is the future of this funding proposal?
It'll probably go through. I don't think it's on their radar as being a big negotiating factor. There could potentially be changes with the reports and oversight. I was pulling up what I'd written, quoting the HHS report, and it says, although connecting people to existing programs like WIC or housing assistance can be helpful, the model being piloted by the Human Coalition has not been subject to independent research or evaluation, therefore it cannot be identified as evidence-based or even a best practice. So they recommended against it. So there are oversight issues, but there is some oversight with the fact that these reports are made and accumulated, and they've responded back on where things stand. So there is government oversight, even when the government is questioning other oversight, and the purpose of the lawmakers is to pay attention to those recommendations, and which, of course, they can take or leave it depending on what it is and what the parameters are for what they want to fund.
Dawn Vaughn, a reporter for the News and Observer, and Kimberly Kelly, Director of Gender Studies and Associate Professor of Sociology at Mississippi State University. Lindsay Beierstein is a journalist and documentary filmmaker. I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the music of Sonny Miles. Stay tuned.